US President Donald Trump has criticized social media companies after Facebook and Twitter banned several prominent conservative accounts from promoting extremist views. The US president tweeted his complaint over the weekend, saying he'd be monitoring the censorship of American citizens on social media platforms. This comes after Facebook announced that it was banning so-called extremist figures, including InfoWars conspiracy theorist Alex Jones, alt-right figure Milo Yiannopoulos, and Nation of Islam leader Louis Farrakhan. Retired Admiral Michael S. Rogers is a former commander of the U.S. Cyber Command and director of the National Security Agency of the Obama and Trump administrations. He's in Australia as a distinguished visiting fellow at the Australian Strategic Policy Institute, or ASPI's, Cyber Centre. He's the keynote speaker at its National Security Dinner tomorrow night. Michael S. Rogers, welcome to RM Breakfast.
Good morning, Fran. Thank you.
Donald Trump, if we could just deal with this first, has lashed out at Facebook for banning the accounts of some extreme conservative voices, describing it as an attack on free speech. Do you think Facebook has made the right call in not giving these voices from the far right a public platform?
So I think, look, fundamentally, the idea of censorship, if you will, is difficult in any democracy. And I think the challenge is we now have groups, nation states, individuals who are trying to use that very freedom-based structure that we have to sow hate, discord. You saw this in the Christchurch attacks. So I would argue every society, particularly the democratic ones, need to step back and ask themselves, what are we comfortable with? We've accepted for the idea that exploitation of children is totally unacceptable. So social media has been censoring, if you will, that associated activity, violence, and other things. I think this is just part of a growing trend about how do we step back and ask ourselves, what are we comfortable with?
So any accounts, doesn't matter which direction, left, right, center, religious, that spread hate speech and incite violence, right. How much of a threat do you think those forces are there on these social media sites?
I don't know about specifically how much threat they are, but certainly I think they have served to amplify, if you will, in some ways, some aspects of violence that all of our societies are dealing with at the moment. And I just don't think that's in the long-term best interest. Even as I acknowledge the freedom of expression, the ability to articulate your viewpoint is a fundamental aspect of democracy for your nation and for mine as well.
Can I go to security concerns around 5G networks across the world? US has been pressing its allies to limit the role of the Chinese telecom equipment makers Huawei over concerns their gear could be used by Beijing for spying. Australia took the lead on this. Our former Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull has urged others to do the same. Should other nations follow Australia's lead and ban Huawei from the 5G network? What's your view on this?
So my view is every nation should be having a discussion about, so what? How do we ensure our economic competitiveness in this digital world that we find ourselves in? And I would argue 5G will be foundational as we move forward to a nation's economic competitiveness. So I think we need to think about national security in a much broader way. I would make this much less about, well, it's about China or it's about Huawei. And I would argue, no, this is much more about, so what kind of comfort level should a nation have with components of a particular national construct, for example, that enables the nation state, in this case China, to say to its private businesses, I want total access to everything you have and everything you're doing, because that's part of their legal structure. It's built into their legal framework. I just think we should be asking ourselves, are we comfortable with that?
So I'm just trying to clarify what you're saying, though. You're saying we should be worried about it because of the capacity to infiltrate, because of that sort of rule you've just outlined, or
right,
because you're saying we're missing out on the competitive, therefore the commercial edge that 5G gives us.
I'd be worried about any nation's ability to significantly degrade or deny core aspects of my infrastructure. And while a lot of people focused on the spying aspect, in terms of the extraction of information, if you will, while that's an aspect of it, I would argue the more important issue I think that you need to look at is it possible that this activity, this backbone, if you will, that you've created in 5G could be disrupted? And think about that, not just from a security standpoint, from an economic competitive standpoint as well.
So do you have a view on the messages coming out of the UK then? It hasn't officially decided whether it's going to let Huawei build the non-core parts of its 5G network, but there has been that leak from top security meetings suggest it would get the green light.
Right.
Do you think UK has been complacent? I mean, they would have heard the same messages that you're giving us now.
Well, first, I always tell people, look, let's wait until we see an actual policy before we start articulating a viewpoint about potential scenarios. But in general, if it is accurate, as reported, I suspect that perhaps the economic piece became a primary driver, and also the fact that they appear to have felt that they can mitigate the risk to an acceptable level. I'm not sure that I share that, but I would like to withhold my judgment until I see the specifics of what policy they will be announcing.
Well, the issue is the value of the technology itself, too. I mean, what 5G enables, and to get it built, and to get it built by the most competent builder. Our former Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull has said it's frankly absurd. The Western nations aren't leading players in what he calls, quote, arguably the most important enabling technology of our time. Have we been caught napping, basically?
Well, I think that's a fair assessment. Rather than pound on the Chinese, I think we should be asking ourselves, so how did we let ourselves get into a situation where the West had no alternative, where Huawei truly does represent the best economic price point and offers a range of capability?
And what's the answer to that question?
How did we? I think the answer is our nations, our governments, and our private sector need to get together and figure out how can our companies compete on a level playing field. Because the reason I think that this has generated the situation we find ourselves in now, where we have no real, at the cheapest price point, we have no real alternative,
no,
is because it hasn't been a level playing field. And I think we need to ask ourselves, how did we allow this to happen? And are we comfortable with that?
Just in terms of not a level playing field, what do you mean? Because we've 6G is coming, of course, so all the positioning needs to be get going now. What's
right,
a level
right.
playing field? What have we been denied?
So, in China, you are seeing a nation state that has an integrated strategy that brings together the espionage tools of the nation state, its research capabilities, its academic institutions, its business structure, mm-hmm. and they have focused that on a series of technologies. 5G is probably the most visible at the moment, but I would argue it's not the only one. And they have used that in a way to help generate capacity in a very integrated way. That's not the West model. Our model traditionally is you let our companies compete individually, head to head. So my question is, or my concern is, so you tell me how an individual Western company is supposed to compete against an integrated strategy coming out of China that involves more than just their company counterpart.
So your message is to Western governments to allow this, to start getting an integrated strategy and allowing that to happen and developing that.
Right. I don't fault China for having a strategy.
Sure.
I think it's very appropriate. My question would be, how did we get ourselves in a situation where we did not have a strategy? And that's just, I think that's the answer for us. We've got to develop a strategy here.
You're listening to RM Breakfast. It's 16 minutes to 9. Our guest is Michael S. Rogers, former commander of the US Cyber Command and director of the National Security Agency over the Obama and Trump administration. In terms of not faulting China, the Australian government has cracked down over the recent year or two on foreign political interference. That at times has put pressure, if not soured, our relationship with China. Yesterday, former Prime Minister Paul Keating said that our security agencies have become responsible for foreign policy. He means, quote, and said, quote, the nutters are in charge. Do you think, by and large, security agencies are too hawkish on the rise of China, are too suspicious and just reluctant to accept a changing of the world guard, if you like?
That's not my experience. Now, remember, I'm an American. I'm a foreigner. I don't live in Australia. I'm not here all the time. I'm not really smart about the internal dynamics on a day-to-day basis that the former Prime Minister Keating or others might be. The point I would make is I've never heard my intelligence counterparts here in Australia and the United States argue, for example, about is China legitimate or not, or is China's economic growth a bad thing? All I've heard discussed is, given that growth, what are the implications for our respective nations, and how do we ensure that we're in a position to compete with China?
And
that's competition at its heart is what our respective nations are taught from our earliest days, at least in the United States. Are we pound into our children? Competition's a good thing. It brings out the best in you. It'll bring out the best in others. You should strive to compete.
Okay. Can I just ask you about Robert Mueller? You've confirmed that Donald Trump called you in March 2017 to discuss stories linking his campaign to Russian interference. You've rejected reports suggesting the president asked you to refute those stories. Can you tell us what the president did say to you?
He just asked me to be honest. He indicated, you know, Mike, I have concerns that what's going on is stopping our nation's ability to interact with the Russians, to develop policies in areas where I think the relationship could actually work to the benefit of the both of us. Hey, are you seeing things? What are you seeing? Do you think that these stories, you know, he didn't use the phrase collusion, but today that's really what we would be thinking of. And I just said, you know, Mr. President, we're in the midst of an ongoing investigation. We need to let that investigation be completed. As an intelligence individual, I am concerned about potentially compromising sources and methods where some of our things to become public. And quite frankly, there is a U.S. person dynamic to this. And I just don't think it's appropriate that as a head of an intelligence agency, I should be talking about U.S. persons. And I got no pushback, and nor did I change anything or take any action as a result of that. I thought I was dealing with someone relatively new in their job at the time. This is in March of 17, so I'd only been in the job for about 2 months, had never served in government before, never worked with the U.S. intelligence structure. I thought he was a person who just wasn't familiar with the traditional norms and mechanisms we use for those kinds of issues. And so I just tried to be a good subordinate and be honest and direct with, you know, one of my bosses.
Okay. Well, given the outcome and, you know, given there's another election looming, the president's largely played down the potential of more Russian attacks on U.S. elections. I think that's fair to say. In your view, has there been enough done to prevent further interference in the upcoming presidential elections?
So I'm not in government now, so I'm not fully informed of the full range of activities that the U.S. and others are taking. I took as a positive sign, you have heard public discussion in the United States about steps the U.S. government took to protect the November 2018 cycle, which is the last major one we had. And I hope that those things we did there are going to continue, because the Russians are not going to walk away from this. If I'm in Moscow, I would think to myself, you know, I've had some measure of success here. I have managed to increase the level of discord. I've caused the United States a huge amount of internal tumultuousness. Hey, that's a positive. I would assume that they will continue doing this.
And can I just ask you briefly, WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange is in jail in the UK. He's scared to death. He's made it clear to everybody he's being sent to the US. Do you believe Julian Assange would get a fair hearing if he's sent to the United States? And do you believe he should be sent there?
I do believe he'd get a full hearing. I mean, my comment was no one should be above the law. And we have a legal framework that enables all of us to articulate our view. And I think it's a positive, I'll speak only for the United States, that there's a mechanism for Mr. Assange to try to make his case. And we'll see how that plays out. But I think, as you saw in the British ruling against him where he had skipped bail, hey, no one is above the law. We got a legal framework to address your concerns. Could we use that?
Michael Rogers, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Michael Rogers, former commander of the U.S. Cyber Command, director of the National Security Agency under Obama and Trump administrations, and currently a distinguished visiting fellow at Aspie Cyber Center.